Hello, welcome to Roots Runners Rhizomes, Radical Health and Healing from the Underground. I'm Sarah Faulkner.
And I'm Lauren Jambroni. Hello.
Who are we in the studio today with?
We got some great guests in the studio today. We have Summer Dawn and Stacy Cope, dear friends, coming all the way from Tucson, Arizona, who used to live here in Hudson a few years ago. And so they're back for a visit, and we're excited to have them on air today to talk to us about their work in harm reduction. So welcome to the show.
Yay.
Hi. What's up, Hudson?
Hi. It feels so good to be here.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to start us off? For folks listening out there who may or may not know what harm reduction means, do y'all want to give us a little definition?
Yeah, definitely. So harm reduction is a concept, a philosophy, a framework for working with loving, supporting people engaging in high-risk behaviors, usually talking about people who are using drugs or people engaging in high-risk sexual behaviors, and a way to show up for them that is pretty different from the way that we've traditionally shown up for people in those ways, which has been an abstinence-only framework. So really sort of coming from a place of options, coming from a place of really centering the voices of people who are using drugs as sort of the experts on their own care and what they need. I think traditionally in healthcare settings, in treatment and recovery communities, in the criminal justice system, it's sort of been like the one option and the one solution is to just stop doing that behavior. And if we know that if it was that simple, then we wouldn't need concepts like harm reduction, right? Or we wouldn't need alternatives. But we know that just offering this one option of stop doing this behavior that's maybe a coping skill or is coming from a place of trauma is a lot more complicated than that. So all about sort of like supporting any positive change in somebody's life. We know that most people don't like wake up one day and change every aspect of their life that's unhealthy or chaotic or problematic. It usually looks like tiny, tiny little changes. So sort of like how can we show up and support those tiny, tiny little changes? Yeah, I know that this is like a concept that was really born out of the 1980s HIV/AIDS crisis. So we saw that, you know, sort of these really high rates of HIV transmission from people who are injecting drugs. And again, just like telling somebody to stop injecting drugs or telling somebody to stop sharing drug equipment literally changes nothing. So really trying to like show up with different options. And that's when we saw people starting, you know, sort of like small underground community-led needle exchange programs. And that was kind of this like first big example of like what can harm reduction look like on a larger scale. And then, of course, we've seen those things sort of institutionalized now, and harm reduction can look lots of ways. So that's like sort of what maybe how it was born and like what it's looked like on a big scale. But harm reduction can look like all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And obviously we'll go more into that. But it's not necessarily just for people who are engaging in high-risk behaviors. It can also just be like a friend that's like going through a hard time or somebody that's dealing with health issues. How do you show up for them and support them? How do you give lots of options and like really like how do we just ask instead of sort of telling people what they need? Like, mm-hmm. you know, ask them what they need. That was a really long explanation.
Great. That was awesome. And yeah. Stacy, do you have anything to add to that right now?
When I teach youth, I usually just tell them just to break it down in like a really simple way because they're only going to hear so many words. It's just presenting options and education for people to make informed decisions. Semantics matter, so I make sure to say not better decisions or even like different decisions, but really just an informed decision. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Totally.
I remember when I worked in harm reduction after I came back from herb school. I worked at a homeless youth drop-in center and needle exchange in the Lower East Side. And like one of the most important lessons that I learned working in harm reduction philosophy that I feel like I've carried into my life, whether it's being like an herbalist in clinical practice or just like better neighbor and community member, is the idea to meet people where they're at. And so like the baseline standard is no assumptions, no judgments, no criticisms, no, right, like no abstinence, no putting your thoughts or ideas or beliefs onto someone else, regardless of like what state they're in and what you think might be best for them. It's like, it is about like empowering folks and building relationships of support so that people can make, like Summer was saying, informed decisions on their own life. And that idea of like meeting people where they're at has been so profound to me. Even to notice little times where I might be assuming or judging and like didn't even know that I was, like it's really helped me to be a way more compassionate and understanding person. And especially now more than ever, or every time more than ever, I don't know, just feel like it's a really important thing to learn about and embody. So I just wanted to add that. But
and I just want to add that for me, harm reduction, it feels like a worldview not unlike permaculture, in that you can operate from a lot of different positions within that worldview. And I mean, honestly, I think this radio show, we're both very harm reduction minded in terms of wanting to just present plurality of information and experience and let people who are listening work with that, take that in, you know, and move forward from there without our judgment or trying to promote anything other than empowerment for mm-hmm. both listeners and anyone who's on the show.
And when you ask somebody, when you start off a question asking somebody what they need, even just on their face, you can just see like, whoa, I'm not used to being asked what I need. Mm-hmm. It's hard to center voices when you're not starting off with their needs first. And when you care about people, especially, it's hard. You know, we've learned like applying harm reduction within the community at large is really easy, but it gets really difficult when working with like family or people that we're close to, who we may feel that we're entitled to have an opinion about. But yeah, when you just ask somebody what they need, it's almost like they weren't ready for that question, so they don't even really know. So just helping people out by like, hey, what do you need? It changes the game from the beginning.
Yeah, that's a huge power differential restructuring right there.
Yeah, especially in if like working in kind of any nonprofit or, you know, healthcare institution, usually people are told like, here is your treatment plan, here are your goals, here's how you're going to reach them. The like expectations are set for them instead of people setting them for themselves. So when, you know, when we work with folks, like Summer said, and we just like ask and listen and keep it really like low threshold, low barrier, you see like that level of trust and engagement build a lot quicker. And for those of us like doing, you know, harm reduction work in those like nonprofit settings, I did it for years and without like a real understanding of harm reduction, and it took a much heavier toll on me. Like, not only is it better to practice harm reduction for the people that you're supporting, but like for me and for people involved in that work, I have better like self-care. I feel better about the work that I'm doing. It feels more realistic. Before, like, I had all those expectations and judgments, and that didn't feel good, you know, and it didn't feel my like relationships with clients didn't feel good, and like the whole thing was just sort of messy and like power dynamics, and like it was not fun. And then being introduced to, you know, what can harm reduction look like, I feel like in the last couple of years my work has like felt so much easier and more fulfilling, and I feel connected and like well taken care of and well supported. Like, I'm supporting clients and like they're supporting me back and like a lot of reciprocity happening. And yeah, it's a huge shift, not only like for people trying to come into these services, but for the people working in these institutions as well.
Do you want to like maybe get into a little bit more about Stacy, where you work, and Summer, where you work? Because y'all work in harm reduction, but in two different ways that maybe intersect and overlap, of course,
definitely.
But two different places of business, for lack of a better word.
Business.
who wants to go first?
Oh,
go
and ahead. Also, if you want to share anything about how you both came to do what you're doing right now. And
sure. I've been working in nonprofit for the last several 5-ish years. And that looked like working in domestic violence shelter, working with youth in a rehab facility, and then met some friends who started a like super underground unsanctioned needle exchange in Phoenix, where I'm from. Needle exchange is illegal in Arizona, but this was just like a group of people who knew it was important and wanted to do this work. So this like really looked like us going to meeting up with people in a park and giving them sterile injection equipment and meeting people on the light rail and really small, but whatever we could handle. And since then, that needle exchange has grown and is amazing. And I feel like so proud of the people that have done that work. I always say that like folks in places like Arizona where needle exchange is illegal, or folks doing harm reduction in general, are like our unsung heroes and like don't get credit and don't get the proper praise. So did that. And then now those friends that started that needle exchange kind of went legit and started a nonprofit. And we do lots of harm reduction stuff. So we do like policy work, advocacy work, both on the state and local level. Recently got some really important Narcan or naloxone legislation passed last year. So this year we got a grant to do statewide overdose prevention education and naloxone distribution, which is lots of words to say that I get to drive all over Arizona and do trainings for healthcare professionals, for behavioral health workers, for people working in treatment facilities, but as well as people who are using opioids themselves, about how to use Narcan or naloxone. So for anyone who's not familiar with what that is, Narcan is the opioid overdose reversal medication. So somebody's overdosing on something like heroin or Oxycontin, and you give them this medication and they hopefully will come out of that overdose. So teaching professionals as well as community members and drug users themselves how to use this medication, and then just handing it out like candy.
I want to just butt in too. Here in Columbia County earlier this summer, we had one, and I'm not sure if the second happened. We definitely had community-led education and distribution.
Amazing.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yay.
Yeah.
And I'm blanking on the person's name who organized those, but we'll...
I want to meet them.
Yeah. but I just want to give a shout out to local folks, so just yes. Be aware this is available to us, the people here in Columbia County, too.
Amazing.
And Stacy, can you tell us the name of the place where you work, and
maybe
a website or something in case folks are interested?
Yeah, so it's Sonoran Prevention Works is the name of the nonprofit. The website is www.spwaz.org. So again, we do this work all over the state of Arizona. There's 3 of us for the whole state of Arizona, which feels wacky, but important, and we feel lucky to be doing the work. So yeah, lots of emphasis on Narcan and naloxone, but hanging out at the needle exchanges, still doing underground needle exchange, still trying to get really important legislation passed. Arizona's just like so behind, right? Like we don't even have Good Samaritan laws, which means if somebody calls 911 and says my friend is overdosing, that person could be arrested, the overdose victim could be arrested.
It's so real in Arizona.
And then we demonize people and say, you know, like that they don't care and that they like leave their friends to die, but we don't even offer like some really basic liability protections that most other Americans have. So yeah, just really like fighting the fight in this really conservative place that still believes that people who use drugs deserve to die, which is really heartbreaking. And I've seen that like shift in people where they have these really awful views, and then you know somebody close to them starts using opioids, and then they're on board, which is really unfortunate that it takes that for people to see that like nobody deserves to die from using drugs or to get HIV or Hep C or endocarditis or other really life-threatening and life-altering diseases from using drugs, and this like backwards tough love sort of approach is killing people, and it's like not working. It's never worked. It's not working now. And my job is to like, I talk about harm reduction all day. It's like this foreign concept to people in Arizona. I feel like, you know, you talk about it in New York and places like San Francisco and Chicago and places that have been doing amazing harm reduction work forever. And most people know what that means or have like some indication of what that means. And I say those two words together, harm reduction in Arizona, and like people look at me like I'm crazy. They have no idea what I'm talking about. And when I like break it down of what that means, look at me like I'm crazy. And like, you know, that it enables drug use and like all these other really tired misconceptions that have been like proven over and over again to not be true. So it feels like an uphill battle. It feels like a lot of pressure. It feels hard to see our overdose numbers continue to climb. But just keep doing it until we can't. Yeah.
Cool. This is summer. I work for the Southern Arizona AIDS Foundation, which is a nonprofit in Tucson that provides a plethora and insane amounts of services. But I work in the prevention department, and I work with youth prevention. So I get paid under two different grants. One of the grants that I teach is youth empowerment and LGBTQ leadership. So we go into schools and work primarily with GSAs, which are gay straight alliances. Just a precursor, or just a note on Arizona, another fun fact is that we are an abstinence-only state. So we do not have, on top of them trying to take away all our ethnic studies programs, they've already taken away health and sex education. So it's opt-in education. With that said, I go into public high schools and junior highs and work a lot with gay straight alliances, because the youth that are in those groups already kind of know what their youth are going through, or just have an understanding that health, sex education is super important. So the faculty members that kind of sponsor those programs know what my organization does and knows that we come in and teach these classes. So yeah, I do, I also do drug prevention or overdose prevention as well. So basically I teach youth how to basic communication skills, but also how to communicate around having sex and doing drugs and what that could look like. Youth HIV prevention is something I also do, which involves a little bit of talk about Hep C and STIs. So I just, long story short, kind of teach them, if you want to inject drugs, this is how you can do it safely. And if you want to have sex and you want to use condoms, here are the different kinds that are available. I take like boxes of dildos into high schools and show them how to put on condoms and use dental dams and all of those kind of preventative measures in order to make informed decisions. And I could go on about it forever, but it's pretty cool. And working a lot, especially with the indigenous population that we have in Tucson, working with Two-Spirit youth and trans youth, and I also work in the drop-in center for LGBTQ youth, But just teaching them that there's options and that there's other ways and other, you know, sex and drug use can be positive and it can be healthy. But if you don't even have the baseline of knowledge, it can get kind of weird. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I feel pretty lucky to do this work. You can't teach in the state of Arizona, even if I have parental consent. So all the youth that take my classes have parental consent, but legislation reads that in sex education, even with parental consent, I'm not allowed to teach that there's a safe way to have homosexual sex. Which is So I am not allowed to teach that there's a safe way to have homosexual sex. So it's, I mean, the world is a binary, like, yeah.
Wild West.
That's an Arizona state.
Correct.
Yes, law. Ma'am. Uh-huh.
And what?
I mean, homos don't have sex safe,
if
I
they
guess.
Do,
I
then
don't
it, like,
and if
is,
they do, they
it kills you.
It kills you.
Oh, my How? Gosh.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Good. So, I mean, obviously, I mean, especially working with GSAs, but, I mean, the youth... I'm not there to police language, so they are allowed to, like, curse and say whatever. You know, that also helps unpack, you know. Yeah. Am I allowed to say fag?
Sure.
Well, fag, you know,
in,
like.
In this context, yes.
Great.
Yes.
So, you know, when I always have the, like, puffed up 15-year-old dude that's like, I'm not a fag. I don't talk about that kind of stuff. You know, like, it's a way to, like, be able to unpack that language and why using that word could be hurtful and maybe give, like, other alternative words to use. But yeah, you know, the youth know what's up. So I talk about these things. You do have to be pretty careful because you don't always know what youth are in there and what they're going to take home. I've definitely had a few sit downs with principals like that. You probably that could be misunderstood. And even with youth, harm reduction is such a they're not used to hearing these concepts. So sometimes they do think it's like, oh, well, my teacher said I could have all the unprotected sex if I just use lube. Well, that's true. It reduces harm. It can, you know, reduces harm of micro tears and all these things. But yeah, you have to be really careful. So we do teach like, hey, but it's easy to teach, like, if a penis goes in a butthole and you use a condom, this is what this looks like, you know, like, and you don't have to say that they're both male-bodied individuals or, you know, whatever people identify as being homosexual sex. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I could go to jail for teaching that there's a safe way to have homosexual sex.
Yeah, welcome to the Wild West.
Yes, we out here.
Doing the Lord's work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, my gosh.
Blessings on you both. Yeah. Blessings on you both, and thanks for your good work. Whoa.
I mean, it's really hard for me not to curse right now.
I know.
Yeah,
real quick, I just want to say we're Roots Runners Rhizomes on WGXC 90.7 FM, and we're here with Stacey Cope and Summer Dawn, former folks who used to live in town here in Hudson and have since been in the desert of Tucson, and we're here talking about harm reduction and how gay sex is illegal in Arizona. I'm losing my mind.
We can't even talk. Like, it's not even just illegal. It's illegal to talk about.
Wow.
In 2017.
In 2017. Yeah. So I had a question. Is that good? Just in thinking about, you know, hearing you guys talk about your work and, like, obviously we can hear that it's really important to you and you're really passionate about it and you're such good folks, like, it's such a good fit. I'm so glad that the communities that you work with have you. And Stacey, you had talked about this before. I'm just curious, what are some ways that y'all, either with each other, on your own, or with your organizations, like, what are some ways that you take care of yourself or you engage in self-care that helps you sustain doing this really important work that I imagine in the day-to-day sometimes is, like, incredibly thrilling and sometimes can maybe be really challenging or really hard? So just curious about some of your go-tos.
What is self-care?
Yeah. I mean, we've been having this conversation a lot this year, and, you know, people say like self-care, self-care, self-care. And like, I don't know that I really know what that means. Like take a bubble bath or what, like that after a really hard day, like taking a bubble bath, like I can't even take a bubble bath. Sometimes self-care is like sitting in my bed and staring at the wall. Sometimes mm-hmm. self-care is like letting it out and like having a gnarly, ugly cry. Like, I don't know. I don't really know what self-care is, to be honest. And it changes all the time. And I'm like working on developing what that means because I've been doing this work for a while. And like, I know that that is important and I need to do that, but I struggle to like know what that is for me. It definitely means taking lots of plant medicine. It definitely means hanging out outside. It definitely means like swimming in a patch of yerba mansa and like taking a bath with creosote. Like usually plants are involved in that, and I know that that's a piece that works. But sometimes when it's 115 degrees outside, like that doesn't feel possible. Sometimes that means driving to Mount Lemmon. We're surrounded by mountain ranges that are just like, oof, epic, and really nourishing. But I don't know. Sometimes that means watching The Sopranos for like 7 hours. Totally. It just like every day, maybe it's something different.
I'm totally going to out us as normies. That's all beautiful. But we also totally pump iron in the gym.
Yeah.
We have a gym membership.
Yeah. Awesome. Meditate, sit on a pillow, like hang out with my dogs, garden, call Lauren. Yeah. I don't know.
Queers who are adulting.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I totally hear you, Stacey, and I really understand. Like, I totally hear you, and let's talk all the time about it. And it also seems like you do know. In a lot of ways, like
figuring it out.
Yeah, exactly. The mountains and the dogs and the yerba mansa and the good food you guys cook at home. It's like all of those foundational things are so important.
And to even watching The Sopranos. I mean, we've done a couple shows about self-care, and so many of us who are providers go through all this self-judgment and blame too. Like, well, my self-care doesn't look like what, you know, late stage capitalism says it is, which is a bunch of products that I purchase from white lady sisterhood that totally. Are totally appropriated often, right. You know, totally. But yeah, watch The Sopranos, pump the iron up Planet Fitness. If it's working,
yes,
more power to you. That's totally. Yeah.
And since we plug The Sopranos, got to plug that Friday Night Lights and the Friday Night Tykes, clear eyes, full hearts, cannot lose.
So good.
Yeah, I guess I just want to give a shout out to like folks who are feeling like, I don't know what self-care is.
Yeah.
And like, maybe we don't always need to articulate it because, yeah, I think you're right, Lauren. Like, we know, but sometimes it doesn't feel good to like say it out loud. Maybe it's things I need to keep to myself. Maybe my self-care is a secret and like you don't get to know about it. And like for anybody who's like struggling with what that means to figure out what self-care is for you and that it can look different every day and what self-care looked like last week maybe is not self-care this week.
And what looks like self-care to everybody else doesn't have to look like self-care to you either. It can look, it's hard for me sometimes to not compare what my self-care looks like to what other people that I work with or I'm surrounded by looks like, and that just adds kind of like a whole other pressure to take care of myself, and then I just spin down the wheel of not taking care. It can get super weird, but I think it's important to like not compare that to what other people do, just as much as like comparing bodies to bodies and you know, attitudes and all of these other things. Like, self-care is what it looks like to you, and in a partnership too, that can look, you know, those things look differently and they should look differently. And although, like, you know, doing the same work as my partner, a lot of times, like, coming home, you just want to like turn into each other and have like your routine, because you know that the love and all of the support is there. But it's important also to seek out, you know, separate things in your partnership. Like, going to the gym is cool to have like a person there, but also packing the car and going on a trip by yourself for the weekend and, you know, get naked in the woods by yourself is also totally important. So shout out to all those queer partners out there trying to make it work for themselves and each other.
Also, how we're talking totes harm reduction.
Yes.
Yeah. Because harm reduction, like, acknowledges that these hard things exist in life, right? Like, drug use exists, and trauma exists, and sex work exists, and like, they're here, they're not going anywhere unless you have like a magic wand that can dismantle all of the really oppressive systems. Like, they're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so instead of trying to stifle, ignore, deny, force, coerce, like, shame them out of existence, they're here, and like, how can we literally just reduce the harm? It's like that right. simple, right. right? Like, instead of focusing on the things themselves, the drug use itself, we focus on the harms associated with it, and that's it. Because drug use isn't going anywhere, anywhere.
I hope it's not going anywhere.
I mean, that's real. Like, drugs meet important needs for people, and that needs to like be acknowledged and celebrated. Drugs are, you know, a way to socialize, a way to cope with life, a way to cope with trauma. They are a way to deal with mental health stuff that's undiagnosed, untreated, physical health stuff that's undiagnosed, untreated. Like, they're a tool for lots of people, and it's real. And unless you can, like, change an entire person's life and, you know, change poverty and change racism mm-hmm. and change mm-hmm. sexism and homophobia and all of the things, like, it's not going anywhere. So just help keep people alive and as healthy as possible. And like, that's literally all that you can do.
And of course, what gets classified as an illegal drug versus something that gets prescribed, oh. right? Want to say a few things about how you feel yeah. about all that and yeah, maybe some oppression that's freighted in that whole process?
I mean, that's pretty
Arizona, neat. Yeah, we're going to like totally break Arizona down right now, but like
I'm so excited to hear. Yeah,
so I have a lot of sickness going on in my body, and I live in Arizona, which the cool thing is that there, we do have medical marijuana. It's the only, I don't take pharmaceuticals, and, plant medicine is amazing and it works. Sometimes that process takes a little bit to get rolling. You have to have patience in a different way than you do if you take Western medicine. But something that has pretty much the only thing that has worked for me on a pain level every day just to like get me walking and out of bed is making CBD tinctures. And so I have a medical marijuana license that allows me to do that legally. Within this last year, Stacey and I have looked into the foster care system. There are 22,000 youth in the foster care system in the state of Arizona. And that's just what's reported. And so we want to foster youth and kind of create a safe space, especially for trans and queer youth in Arizona. A lot of the services are faith-based. And so last year, over 5,000 youth went AWOL from that system. And we can assume that a lot of those were trans and queer youth because we know a few of them. So, yeah, we just want to be a part of that system. And we started taking the classes for that. And we went to the first class, which was, there's not enough time to talk about how problematic these systems and classes are. But the one thing that we found out is that I cannot legally be prescribed marijuana in foster children. So I can be prescribed, you know, at the same time, I can have a prescription for Oxy and for benzos and for Valium. I can drink alcohol, and I can keep alcohol and benzos next to my locked up Glock 9 or maybe AR-15. And I can foster youth, but I cannot legally be prescribed marijuana and be in the care of foster children in the state of Arizona. So
I think that's in every state, though, actually, because the weed thing is a federal issue. Since weed is federally illegal, if you are a part of a system that receives federal funding, which the foster care system does, then you have to be in compliance with federal law.
So I don't think it's an Arizona thing. So even if your state has legalized medical marijuana, correct, the federal legislation supersedes that in this case.
Yep. Yeah, and I feel like we work with a queer mom at an agency who has adopted youth and was going to try to figure out kind of a way to get around it. I mean, I think that with 22,000 youth in care, there's, you know, or in states that really need people to do this, there's probably, it probably happens, but I feel like Arizona is just like its own particular beast when it comes to this kind of stuff. And it's a lot harder to like kind of get around those things. I mean, although it wasn't for lack of trying, but
yeah, how you get around it is like you just do everything illegally, which feels dumb. Like we paid the money and went through the process to like be legit. And then that is like not good enough or not okay. Or like it's encouraging folks to
be deceitful and break the law.
And like, yeah, which is silly.
And I have, I have a fingerprint clearance card and I go into high schools and junior highs, like public schools, who some of the youth that are in the foster care system attend and have been to my classes, mm-hmm. but I can't, I could teach them in those settings, but I just can't have them in my home. Which is pretty,
yeah.
That's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is pretty heartbreaking. But so now I'm just gonna not have a license and foster youth and have guns because I can't own guns. If I have, Arizona has one of the most lax. You don't have to have a license to carry, to conceal or open carry. You can just buy a gun. If you're 21,
I mean, you have to have a concealed weapons license.
You don't actually, if you travel out of state, you do. But you can conceal carry in Arizona without having a license. You can take the class and have a license, but you don't technically legally have to have a license to conceal. But if you have a medical marijuana license, you can't legally have guns.
Wow. But you can drink and have prescription.
All of them.
Things that maybe could interfere stuff. With judgment, which is usually the justification given to us. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that makes no sense.
Zero. Yeah.
To me.
I don't remember what your first initial question was, but I know that the answer
is the way I ask the questions is kind of like.
Cool.
Make a space for you to say what's. And that was. Very illuminating to me. Wow.
Yeah. With that, I mean, Arizona is a really beautiful place, and Tucson is definitely an oasis in Arizona. And there are a lot of people doing super radical work. You know, a lot of, and I think the people that do this work don't do it to get the praise and the kudos. But yeah, like Stacey did earlier, just like another shout out to the people in Arizona, like really holding it down. Tucson's only an hour and 15 minutes away from the Mexico border.
Mm.
So yeah, the scene there can be pretty intense, and there's a lot of amazing organizations out there doing work in a state that really, really, really needs.
We love y'all.
Yeah, we love y'all super hard.
Shout out to No More Deaths.
Yeah.
Yeah, No More Deaths. I don't know that they're happening anymore right now. Federal agents.
You guys want to talk about happening? Unpack that for listeners?
Definitely still happening, but they got raided, or their main camp got raided a couple months ago. That just means they move. Yeah, I mean, lots of people have some not great opinions about that organization. It is a faith-based organization, but
that's a huge but.
But the like essence of the work is like carried on by people in lots of ways. You don't necessarily have to be like a part of No More Deaths to do that work. So what that means is No More Deaths is a group of folks who are stationed near the Mexico border and are providing food, water, healthcare, social support, and whatever possible to folks who are crossing the border. Usually they have like sort of like mainstay camps, but then also folks like travel in to like the really gnarly parts of the desert to find people, to drop off water, to be available. But yeah, it's like sort of people who, and it's not just like you go for an hour, like people live in these camps, people live in these like really, really harsh places, parts of the desert, and are just available to support people who are coming over the border. And it's existed for decades. And yeah, No More Deaths is probably like the most notable organization, but there are people and groups and organizations that do this work as well. Mm. So important.
Yeah, Tucson, Arizona has the largest. Our morgues are full. We have like, I want to say over, I'm not going to quote that number, but we have the large, our morgues are full and we have the largest amount of what they call John and Jane Does of unidentified folks in the morgues from crossing the border and not making it all the way. And Arizona also has like the militiamen and, you know, patriots and the dudes on the border who straight up just shoot people that cross. And people in No More Deaths have like, you know, they go and they'll plant gallons of water throughout the desert just for people that can make it across. And those dudes will kind of come behind them and shoot the bottles of water so that they're not full. And also know border plenty of people. Yeah, Border Patrol does it too. And then know plenty of people who have been No More Deaths folks who have been shot at, you know, people thinking that they're what these men like to refer to as illegals. Yeah, it's super gross.
Wow.
But yeah, it's pretty, the Sonoran Desert is it's a pretty harsh environment, and especially when you've been traveling and crossing without water. And yeah,
but a prime place for like direct action, so people from all over the country and all over the world come to do work with No More Deaths and similar organizations. And if anybody's feeling like amped up about how to get involved and you want to hang out in the desert, summer's almost over, so it's not as gnarly.
It's not as gnarly, but it's also not glamorous. Like, it's definitely not for the like notch on the belt activists who feel like they need to like show up and hold a sign. I mean, it's really intense, and you're intense, and there's no showers, and you will see dead bodies, and you know, you don't get to drive a car in. Yeah, so it's definitely not for like the folks that just like kind of want to check in and check out. But yeah, if you want to get into it and get into the gritty, holler at Tucson and then you can come shower at our house whenever you're done.
Yeah.
So those are some awesome examples of direct action and other things folks can do when policy and law are oppressive. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that in your work you also do some policy work towards changing policy. You want to talk a little bit about that? Or not.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like not something that I really ever thought that I would be involved in, and like not something that I feel, I guess I'll say that I don't feel super excited about it, but I know that it can be important. Like we wouldn't have the grant that we have if my boss didn't work tirelessly to get that naloxone bill passed. We would still be doing the work. It just wouldn't be on the same scale. Like, we've been handing out Narcan since 2012. But now it's legal for us to do so we can get like grants and money and support and advertise it and do it on a bigger scale. So I know that it's important, but sometimes it's for me hard to see that it's important. Like, I'm gonna do it anyways, and so like, why do I need to go through all of these bureaucratic processes and like kiss butt and like schmooze and with people who really think very differently than I do, and like play these weird political games? And but what it looks like honestly is we just like sort of cold call our local representatives and say, this is what we're working on and we want your support. And then they'll like take a meeting with us and we'll pitch to them whatever we're doing, and like all you really need is for one person to like sort of sponsor your bill, right? And usually what that means is we have to get a Republican to sponsor our bill, because we know that the Democrats will usually vote for what we're proposing. But in order to get the other side of the aisle to vote, we need a Republican to like introduce the bill. So really, it's just like, it's games that I never wanted to play and that I really don't enjoy playing. But I understand why they can be important. And like the needle exchange, it has to happen. It has to happen. We've gotten a representative to introduce it every single year for the last 3 or 4 years. And it still hasn't gone through. And the Good Samaritan Bill has gotten introduced for the last, like, I don't even know.
Forever years.
And, like, will not go through. So it sort of also feels like a waste of time. Like, why am I spending time schmoozing and doing this thing when it's just, like, not happening? And that comes with, like, lots of education. And it's, like, exhausting. And I would rather just be, like, on the street doing outreach and working with people who use drugs and the people who love people who use drugs and, like, not waste my time with folks who, like, don't really care and who are playing political games. And, like, the legislation that I'm wanting them to introduce, like, they don't necessarily care about it, but it, like, it's self-serving for them in some way. So it's nice. I often, like, check in with my boss and I'm just like, I don't want to do that. You can do that. That's what you get for being an executive director of a nonprofit. Yeah. Like, you do that and I'll do this. Right. And she totally hears that. So usually I'm not a huge part of those processes, but have been more so lately because I am wanting to learn what that process looks like. I met with some of our federal representatives, like a congresswoman who is just like, maybe I won't go too far into that, but yeah, it's just like not, it sometimes feels like a waste of time. I'd rather be hanging out at the needle exchange or go to the methadone clinic or, yeah, not do that.
Mm-hmm. I'm totally in solidarity with that. And, you know, this is why plurality is so beautiful, right? Like, we all have different interests and skills and viewpoints. And, you know, as I get older, I just keep going more towards what feels good to me, mm-hmm. and I get good feedback on, and totally. Someone else might have a different way and prefer that, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think when you do the work every day and it's already so hard and it's already so discouraging because you're listening to clients and especially youth, prevention monies are always little, but youth prevention is like, we scrap it together. And so when you're listening to this every day and you have nothing to provide every day, it makes it hard to, like, go get beat down on a state and federal level or want to even, like, show up for that because it's so hard to just, like, keep my own self-care head above the water, you know, that does not feel that at the end of the day on top of the work to do that work. And obviously, I mean, Stacey and I work in, you know, I'm not at the level, I'm kind of under the, you know, the bottom of the barrel of the nonprofit, like, world as the health education, like, specialist, you know, I don't have to deal with the, like, money part of the nonprofit or getting the grants or, you know, I just, like, produce the numbers. So I don't have to really worry about that, but I definitely feel like when I feel like I'm not doing enough, I'm like, I want to sit down and write legislation. And then it's like, who am I kidding? Like, I don't know how to do that. And yeah, I don't want to get beat down. It's going to take away from, like, already what we do, like, every day. So yeah.
Well, your example too of just how the federal law has superseded the state law, when I come up against things like that personally, I'm just like,
whatever, I'm just going to do it. Like,
I was going to go somewhere else. Do we want to stay here for any? Okay.
Let's go.
I was just like, oh, okay, we have, like, maybe
lean into it. Lean into the mystery.
Yeah, that's our little motto. Yeah, yeah. Cause we're coming up on about 10 more minutes. And I was just like, okay, so thinking about all this, and all the work y'all are up to in Arizona, but now you're here in the Hudson Valley. Today is the fall. Oh, I shouldn't say that because it's being aired on Monday. Today is a beautiful fall day. Caught myself there. And y'all are on vacation.
Yeah.
So, and thanks for being here on your vacation.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, like, what are some things you're looking forward to either, like, on vacation, no matter where you are, or here in the Hudson Valley, just kind of like, cool, what are you excited about on this week off you have?
Eating bread, all of the Bonfilio bread.
Yes.
I'm going to eat all the bread. I'm not supposed to have gluten, so I, like, saved up my gluten load for Bonfilio. What up, Gabby and Rachel? I love y'all.
Yay.
Miss y'all.
I take gluten holidays, too.
Yes, girl. It's important. Yeah. Eating bread, hanging out at Good Fight Herb Shop. Gonna stop in Spotty Dog. Lil Deb, so proud of those fierce people, ladies, all the in-betweens over there doing their thing. Want to go see it. So yeah, just kind of check in with homies that are all like killing the game in the last 2 years that we've totally missed seeing.
Where are we going Monday? Where are we going Monday?
Oh, girl, we're going to go dig for Herkimer Diamonds on Monday. Just excited to be in the Hudson Valley. I do feel triggered. I feel like I have a hard time like standing in the woods for fear of ticks. We don't have ticks in the desert. So, yeah, I definitely feel like, oh, God, it's so beautiful. But I don't want to, like, walk in it. I'm scared. So, yeah, I'm just going to stick to, like, the Herkimer dirt and the beaten path of Warren.
I'm excited we're doing, as part of Wild Gather, the herb school here that Lauren and Mandana and Nicole have created. They're letting us do like some more fun harm reduction conversations as part of their like health justice piece, and that feels really, really exciting. And thinking about like how to really encourage folks to do this like small scale grassroots stuff, like
start a needle exchange, y'all, start
or one. Like other ways to support people who are using drugs, other people who are in sex work. It's not just people who inject drugs, right? Like there's lots of harm to reduce with all of it. So like just do it, and you don't need permission, and you don't really need much money. You just meet the need always. So that feels exciting. Herb school just not working for a week feels really cool.
We sat in a sauna in Woodstock last night. That was pretty magic. That's self-care, y'all.
Yeah.
Saunas are what's up.
Thanks just to Mandana
and Michael and Tushka for help for letting us do that.
Yeah. Chicken of the woods mushrooms. Obsessed, y'all. Obsessed. And just being in a different landscape feels good. Like, it's my first day here. So we got in Wednesday night, and then Thursday I just felt like sort of sensory overload and like kind of activated, and it's just such a drastic change to like go from sort of the barren, like quiet scarcity of the desert to like abundance and intensity of the Hudson Valley. It's so beautiful. It's so overwhelming. So I like needed a day to feel a little wackadoo about it. And now I'm like easing back into it, and it feels so good. And it's like breezy, but
I'm wearing a hoodie right now, which feels fall really vibes crazy. Already. Yeah, in September to wear a hoodie. Yeah.
It's like 100 degrees in Tucson still.
Which is like the fall for us, granted. So like technically this is winter in Hudson wearing hoodies. But I get an extended hoodie window.
Nice.
Yeah, we're talking about how like we haven't had a vacation like this in a while where there's just like no plans, no events, no expectations, like no nothing that we like have to do. We're just here to like chill the hardest.
So good. Yeah. I'm doing a good job at that.
Yeah. Yes. Sounds good.
How are we doing on time?
We got 7 minutes.
Is there anything else that comes to mind that you're just excited about that you want to talk about in your lives or projects or
Drake.
People?
I love Drake. I'm always excited about Drake. Rihanna, shout out to those two if you're listening. Holler at Good Fight, get you some herbs. I don't know. I'm trying to think of what I'm reading. I'm reading a Murakami book right now. I just actually finished Revolutionary Suicide by Huey P. Newton. We went to the Donald Trump held a rally, which we knew that he was going to probably pardon Joe Arpaio, which he actually didn't do that night. And he waited till the shelter of the hurricane to hit to pardon Joe Arpaio. But we all showed up, and, you know, I've been protesting. I grew up in Los Angeles. We show up to riot, not rally. You know, I've been in some really insane protests. And never had kind of like that police state reaction. And I am not, LAPD is one of the worst. But Arizona, it was just a whole, we just got immediately tear gassed, and they let out the like people on the one side and then tear gassed everybody on the other side. It was really, really, really intense. And so after that, I tried to read this kind of like frilly act, like activist. I don't know if I should like holler it out because I haven't read it yet, but I was trying to read this book that I wasn't vibing with, and I was like, because I was angry and I was like, needed somewhere to channel it. And I read Revolutionary Suicide by Huey P. Newton. So I'm really stoked about that and the concepts. And I think the one resonating thing with me that's kind of like changed my focus in my everyday life and my work, what I read in that book was if you want a revolution, you have to live like a revolutionary. It's a really simple statement, but also really profound. And when you know the work that the Panthers did and stuff, it like obviously makes sense, which prompted me to like, I now have a flip phone instead of an iPhone, and I have no Instagram, and I'm getting rid of my Facebook. And yeah, so I don't know that I'm like necessarily excited about all those things, because it's a lot of work and a lot of like adjustments. But yeah,
important.
Huey P. Newton ditching all of the technology and frill of life, if you will, and getting back to like writing letters and more intention behind communication and community, and also like getting older and being paranoid about listening to my stuff I say. You know, I'll talk about something and then I'll open up a browser on my I would open up a browser, and it's like all the algorithms are there, and
hey, buy this book on Amazon. Yeah, and I'm like, about what you're just talking
I didn't even
about.
Google that, like, get out of here. So yeah,
a long time activist friend of mine and I, for a while we kept seeing toy and teacup terrier puppies. Like, what did we talk about?
Yeah, like,
and I was like, fine. If that's what you got out of that, awesome.
Great.
Right. Oh my goodness.
And yourself?
We've been, you know, getting acquainted with the foster care system and having lots of conversations about birthing children, and I'm excited to continue to think about what it means to be a radical parent and introduce parenthood as a new thing into our lives. Feels really intense and really exciting and really overwhelming. We are soon likely to be taking on some care of our nephews who are 2 and 3 a couple days a week. It's just a whole new vibe, and like trying to figure out that work-life balance and self-care and hobbies and passions and activism and community engagement and parenthood feels like, whoa, but super.
So we're excited to chill. We're just excited to chill.
Yeah, I feel like things are sort of about to pop off in big ways for us. So that's what this week is about.
Good.
Is
soaking it in.
Soaking it in. Yeah.
And eating bread.
Lots of coffee.
Soaking the bread and butter and oil.
Yep.
Yes, please. The best. All of it.
Well, we've been listening or talking with Stacey Cope and Summer Dawn, and what have we been talking about? Harm reduction and LGBTQ youth and the desert and Arizona and Bonfilio bread. It's so nice to have you guys in Hudson.
And good fight. And good fight.
And yeah, so thanks again for sharing your stories about the work you do, about harm reduction. If folks want to look into harm reduction more, I remember there's harmreductioncoalition.org maybe, or
yep.
If there's any other websites or resources.
Yeah, the National Harm Reduction Coalition is great. The North Carolina Harm Reduction Coalition has like tons of really cool videos and like, you know, sort of intro to harm reduction stuff. So does our website, Sonoran Prevention Works website. Also, if people want to talk about this stuff more, about like how to do this stuff in your community, I am like always down to have these conversations. And y'all can email me at scope@spwaz.org. The Drug Policy Alliance is another like amazing national organization that does this work. Lots of resources for harm reduction stuff. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, being Thank in you. Your proximity to New York City, y'all have some pretty great radical and great examples of like where a lot of this work, Ground Zero, started. Mm. So take advantage of it. You're really lucky.
And our next show will be, as always, the fourth Monday of every month, so October 23rd from 2 to 3 p.m.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here.
Y'all are amazing.